Oh, hi there. Hello, and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd suffer with logomania if you talked to me about the idea that you missed today's show. Date your donors. Jonah Halper is author of the book, Date Your Donors. He wants you to enjoy the full breadth of fundraising relationships. He's founder and partner of Altruicity Consulting, and he's with me for the hour. This originally aired on March 4th, 2016. On Tony's Take Two, new relationship videos. We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven, and technology-enabled. Tony.ma/Pursuant Radio. And by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. Telos, turning credit card processing into your passive revenue stream. Tony.ma/Tony Telos. Let's get started with Jonah Halper and Date Your Donors. Jonah Halper is author of the new book, Date Your Donors. He wants you to enjoy the full breadth of fundraising relationships. He's founder and partner of Altruicity Consulting, and he's with me for the hour. So glad to welcome Jonah Halper. Halper. Back to the studio. He's been a guest before. His new book is Date Your Donors. He's a nonprofit marketer and fundraiser with over 10 years of experience, specializing in new donor acquisition and engaging Gen X and Yers. He's founder and partner of Altruicity Consulting. They're at altruicity.com. The book is at dateyourdonors.com. And he's at Jonah Halper, already chuckling.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the studio. Welcome back to the show.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much, Tony.
It's good to see you. Good to have you here. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
How did you get to the concept of dating and donors?
So I started doing fundraising training a couple of years ago, and I just found I started using a lot of dating analogies that was very natural. And as I started to go down that rabbit hole of discussing, you know, how fundraising is akin to relationships and courtship and attraction and things along those lines, I started to think about my career as a fundraiser, and I noticed that there were even the people who, you know, classically trained in fundraising and had the experience, some fundraisers were unbelievable at the craft. Yeah. And there are some fundraisers who, you know, were okay, they're mediocre, or they were just, you know, kind of putting in the time and they're doing the kind of the best practices of the business. But there was a clear line between those who were the born fundraisers or seemingly born fundraisers and those who weren't. And I started to wonder why that was. And it wasn't something you would be able to see in a resume. It wasn't something that was just, you know, you can look and see their track record and see why that was the case. It was experiential. Like I would interact with these people and there was kind of like an ooze of cool. Like it would just like you would be around them and you would be, you know, wanting to be around them. You'd be attracted to them. Yeah. And as that started to take shape, I started to kind of more put a structure around it to say, what is it that those type of people have that make people want to be around them as a fundraiser or as just a human being? And, you know, one of the interesting kind of correlations I found was it was very similar to my high school experience, which is...
Yeah, you were not so cool in high school.
I wish I was on the other side, but no, yeah. What it was is I went to a boarding school, all boys, tremendous amount of testosterone, and basically, you know, the need and the desire to be on the in crowd was the most important thing to me.
Yeah.
I spent so many waking hours just trying to figure out the chess moves that would take me to be in the inner circle, and what it did is it drove me further and further away. I became like the hanger-on. And I thought I was a cool guy. I thought I had, you know, certain skills. I thought I wasn't a terrible ball player. Like the things that were important to high school boys.
Yeah, I was a terrible ball player. I got my varsity letter in announcing.
Oh no.
Yes. I was one step below cheerleader in varsity lettership. So I dealt with these things with like a sense of humor.
Yeah.
And so an embarrassingly large number of times, it would more be people laughing at me you know, than with me.
Right, which only further perpetuates that downward spiral.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the guy's a joker. He's a he's the jester, but he's not. You know, it's not even always laughing with him. Like I said, so
right.
All right, so I dealt with it. That was my athletic outlet, was announcing.
Right there, you
and
go.
Managing.
Right,
I used to carry soccer balls on and off the field, make sure everybody was on the bus on time.
So you're announcing and managing it, kind of understandably why you kind of self-selected into certain kind of career aspirations.
Yeah, now I'm announcing, right, for myself.
Exactly.
I'm not shepherding a bunch of high school kids onto a bus and then announcing, touchdown. No, and the irony is I still know nothing about sports.
Right.
I mean, I have trouble distinguishing football from baseball.
Well, the mark of a great fundraiser is that you can talk intelligently on any subject for about 2.5 minutes. Lord help you if they want to have a deeper dive into any sense.
Yeah. Well, 2.5 minutes, they'll be laughing. and that will be actually laughing at me. But football is the one with the field goals, I think.
Yes, you
but
are correct.
But then baseball has the three-pointers.
No, basketball has three-pointers.
Basketball has the three-pointers. Okay.
Yes.
So the irony was, you know, that there was like somebody whispering what to announce almost in my ear. Oh, that guy got a touchdown. Touchdown!
Yeah.
Number 14. Yeah. That's, here he is, Steve Bruman, who was a friend of mine. I couldn't ever remember his number. But so that's how I dealt with my awkwardness in high school.
So. So where I'm going with this is that I found there were certain kind of character traits of that high school kid who seemed to be the center of attention, and then I found that things don't really change from high school. Things like
I hope I'm an outlier in your theory. I'm an aberration.
Well, no, what it does is we kind of grow into a lot of the things that we are lacking in high school. In high school, you're just naturally you're trying to figure yourself out. There's not necessarily the confidence there. You know, there's that discovery that's going on there. So it's not a natural thing for you to kind of say, this is who I am. These are the skills I bring.
Yeah.
And the confidence that's kind of grown over the years. But that what I'm alluding to and what I'm kind of referencing now is the fact that confidence and clarity, whether it's real or not on the high school level, that perceived confidence is something that people are attracted to. The fact that you say, I know who I am, I know what I stand for, this is what, whether for good or for bad, this is who I am. People want to be around people who have that. Who have the kind of that confidence, say, this is what I stand for, this is what I'm excited about, this is where I'm headed, and I want you to join me.
And confidence and clarity are a couple of things that we're going to talk about.
Yes.
Because, as you're suggesting, those are traits of good fundraisers, those outlier fundraisers that are at the high end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay cool. I'll tell you what, so why don't we go out a little early for our break right now? It seems like a natural place. And when we come back, we'll dive into the details of Date Your Donors. Stay with us. It's time for a break. Pursuant, their newest paper is Demystifying the Donor Journey. They want you to be intentional, deliberate about stewarding your donors so you don't lose them. This is very much what Jonah and I are talking about today. Same subject, different take. Pursuant will help you create and fine-tune your donor stewardship plan. The paper is at tony.ma/pursuantradio. Now back to Date Your Donors. Jonah Helper, my guest. We're talking about his new book, Date Your Donors. You want to start with authenticity. And so this is where I was not so authentic in high school, but I believe I'm much more authentic now. But
sure.
Authenticity, a great trait for fundraisers.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when you are in the business of raising money, you're interacting with a lot of people who are high net worth, who travel in certain circles, have a certain lifestyle. It's easy to kind of pander to them and try to say, I want to be on the inside so I can get money from them. Mm. That's the kind of the perspective, especially a young fundraiser has, is how can I get into this network? And what I mentioned before, and what I think applies when it comes to authenticity, is and also packaged in the nonprofit jargon of mission and vision, the idea is that you should know what you're standing for. In other words, if I, Jonah Helper, am working with a special needs charity, and this is my job and my mandate and what I'm raising money for, I'm not Jonah Helper, Mr. Country Club. I'm not Jonah Helper, Mr. Poker Player, hanging out with these individuals. They may become friends, and that's fine, and they may become my network, but I'm coming to them not underneath the guise of being a buddy, of being one of their friends just being part of their network, but rather I'm coming through the lens of my mission, what I'm in the business of doing, where I'm headed with this, what I hope to accomplish with my mission, and how these individuals can be a part of that experience. So in a way, authenticity is not me trying to fit into their world, more them trying to fit into my world. And that requires me not to be focused on myself, right? And I know what I am, what I stand for, but rather interact with them. And then hopefully they see what who I am and what I stand for, that authenticity, what I'm really in the business of doing, and they'll gravitate
and
to me.
And they're hopefully attracted to it.
Right. Not okay. Me to them, but them to me.
So let's break this down a little, because you're talking about authenticity of the person.
Yeah.
And also authenticity of the organization.
Correct.
All right. So let's start with the person. This is where we get to confidence. You know, you just don't want people to be molding themselves to what they think the donor that they're meeting that day or that hour wants them to be.
Right.
But be true to yourself.
Well, they'll see right through that. In other words, if you're the type of person who's going to be like mission creep, like, you know, this, you know, I may be in the business of doing this. Well, but you're excited about that. Well, let me chase you down there about that. I know what I'm in the business of doing. This is who I am and what I stand for. That person's a hedge fund, you know, man or woman. I am a fundraising professional for this organization. That's what I do. This is who I am and what I do. If the stars align and they're interested in what I'm doing, they'll support it. If this is not of interest to them, if this is not a priority for them, if it's, you know, not meant to be, it's not meant to be. But the moment I start chasing people down, then I'm effectively being that kind of aggressive door knocker to say, you know, give, me, I. And that's why I don't want to be playing.
Now, but what about when you get into situations like you're meeting with a donor and we get into a political conversation or something religious, you know, where your stars are not aligned with theirs? You know, maybe you're on a different political spectrum, a different end of the political Sure. spectrum than they are. How do we stay authentic?
So it's interesting because I'll give a kind of case in point. You know, there's some people who use social media where there's like a clear demarcation line between their personal lives and their professional lives. Right? Yeah. They'll have this is my business account, like this is my business Facebook, this is my organizational Facebook presence, and this is my personal Facebook presence, and never shall the twain, you know, meet. That is not my approach. My attitude is my priorities, my belief system, what's important to me, what I don't think is important to me, is as much a factor in my relationship with these individuals than anything else. The fact they may not agree with me politically, or the fact they may not agree with me, whatever it is, then that's their prerogative, but at the same time, it's nothing to do with the mission, vision, of my cause. I think mature people can make that clear separation between what is relevant to the supporting whatever the good work that I'm doing, whether it's educational, humanitarian, or whatever it is, and what Jonah Helper, you know, does on his free time. Now, there's importance of someone being trustworthy and having credibility and respect, and you can ruin that by what's going on in your personal life. So there is absolutely a certain amount of measure that goes into what you're doing.
Yeah, discretion.
Yes, absolutely discretion. Yeah. But because people look and people see, and if you want them to give you their money and to trust you with their money to accomplish a certain good, if they think that you are not a trustworthy person because of the way you live, or you're reckless in some way or form, then that obviously is going to hurt you on the business side. But I think that things that are whether it's politics or religion, you can agree, be respectful, and you can agree to disagree. And I don't think that will be a deal breaker. In fact, what I find is that when people know Jonah Helper, father of four, Jonah Helper, you know, his religious level or his political involvement, that just shapes me as a person. And I find that the people who I become fast friends with and become my donors are people who become friends in a bigger way than just, you know, thank you for your check and I'll keep you in the loop how the good work is, you know, playing out. It's they become more friends. And I think a good example of that is when I had, you know, a couple of my last children, I would get presents from some of my donors because it was clear that I wasn't just a fundraiser. It was Jonah Helper. Like, of course, you know,
Jonah Helper father.
Yeah. Yeah. So so there's of course a balance there.
Okay. And I see that playing more now in our presidential election year, politics come up more in conversation.
Absolutely.
Than with donors, potential donors, when I'm with clients than, you know, than even just six or 8 months ago.
If you're too highly spackled, like if you're like, you know,
what does that mean? What do you mean?
Like Mr. Clean Jeans, there's no depth to you outside of your job.
Yeah.
People are not going to find a way, not going to connect with you. There's not going to be that human connection because you're just this, you know, automaton doing the work of your organization, and you're not a human being. So I think those other things that add flavor and add color and deepen the relationship. Obviously, again, with a certain amount of discretion, depends on how you live your life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's so important that people realize who you are as a person,
and even not just as your, you know, you mentioned social media, but just in conversation.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be the raging Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders fan. You can be respectful of the other person and say, you know, well, you know, or you don't, maybe you don't even need to in a conversation say what your aspirations are, right, and who you hope will win. Just, oh, you know, okay, yeah, he's cool, or you
right,
know, Hillary's fine. I you know, man, I see points in her. And most people are not going to say, who do you stand for? Who do you want to say? You know, they're not going to challenge that way. I mean,
and that's another thing also is that when there is a conversation where you want to necessarily, you have a position or you feel strongly about something, I think that if you're an open-minded person or a healthy person, those conversations can be interesting without devolving into, you know, violence. So I think that you could have those conversations, and just by virtue of the business, you have those conversations because you could be at a country club, you could be on the golf course, and you're not talking business for 90% of the time. You're talking family, you're talking politics, you're talking religion, you're talking about all the things that everyone talks about. So you have to be kind of present and in that experience and be real.
Yeah, and you want to get beyond the small talk.
Yeah.
I mean, you make the point in Date Your Donors. You know, we're looking for common ground. So we start conversations often with the weather.
Right.
Because everybody shares that. But, you know, if that goes on for more than like a minute and a half, I start to get antsy.
Right.
I mean, we got to get further than the weather.
And they know why you're there. Like, there's no qualms that the reason why you're in their office is because to talk about the mission and vision of your organization, what you hope to do, and why you need their money. So it's not like you've pulled the wool over the eyes and we're talking, you know, baseball, and the next thing you know, we're talking money. They know why you're there. So it's just a matter of yes, making the connection, finding the connection, whether it's through friends, your common connections, whether it's through shared interests, whatever case may be. But they're expecting having a deeper conversation about what you're doing, and they respect you for what you're doing. This is the business that you've chose to be in. You're raising money for a worthy cause and making wonderful impact. So there's nothing to shy away from. It's not fundraising is not a dirty word here.
A lot of these traits, all of these traits that you're seeking in fundraisers can't be ascertained from a resume, and you mentioned this in the book too, that it's a personal business. You want to meet people before. I mean, well, obviously there's going to be a personal interview, but you don't find resumes a very valuable tool for recruitment, basically, is what I'm saying.
Right. I think in general, you'll find word of mouth is always the strongest. You know, is whether you're looking for new business or whether you're looking to find the best people. Companies around the world have wonderful policies where there's incentives if you refer people to the company and they get a job there for existing employees. Mm. There's a reason for that, because if you're willing to put your reputation on the line to bring someone in who you think would be a good fit for the company, then that person has a better chance of being a good person as opposed to just another resume in an inbox. So there's absolutely value, a stronger value in sitting in front of somebody and interacting with them in a real way, to be able to determine if they've kind of got the personality and the kind of the gumption to do the work and do the fundraising that needs to get done, that you would never be able to get by just looking at a piece of paper.
Yeah. How poised are they?
Right.
Right. I mean, you might think, well, you know, the interview is an artificial environment, and there's high stress, you know, for the interviewee. But so is fundraising. I mean, if you're meeting a donor for the first time, that's a bit of high stress. A potential donor for the first time.
Actually, if I could share a quick story that I think.
No, we don't really care. we stay in the abstract.
Here. Right, yeah, yeah.
No,
exactly.
No, we love stories.
All right, so it's interesting you say that. You know, it's high stress experience, the interview process. When I got my first job, I went to like a job fair for for the Jewish Federation system, which is like the United Way for the Jewish community, and it was the national umbrella organization that hosted this job fair, and there must have been 20 different cities represented that had their own local Jewish Federation. organization. And I went to this job fair as a super green 20-year-old kid, did not even know what I was applying for. I was like, I want to help the Jewish community. That's all I knew. I didn't know fundraising. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And I started interviewing for all these jobs called campaign associate. And I thought, oh, political campaign. Nope. Campaign means fundraising. So I didn't know that when I was interviewing. But all the interviews that I had there were what you described, grilling me. You know, what would you do in this scenario? And then you're at an event and this happens. You know, a lot of that kind of stuff. And as someone who is new, that was jarring. I didn't know even how to process that, what the right answer was versus the wrong answer. There was one organization there represented, one federation there from Baltimore, Maryland, who ended up becoming my first boss. Kind of ruined the punchline there. But he didn't ask me any questions about fundraising or nonprofit at all.
What would you do in a difficult situation?
None of it.
Right.
It was, what books do you like to read? Do you like WWF wrestling or WWE as they call it now? Yeah. It was all this random stuff, and I sat with him for 45 minutes and we just like talked. And at the end of the 45 minutes, he was like, all right, we're done. And I was totally confused, because especially in context of all the other interviews that I just had, this one was like he was like wasting my time. I got two callbacks. He was one of them. And I ultimately went to Baltimore, ended up starting my career in Baltimore for 3 years there. And I finally mustered the courage to ask him, obviously, once I had the job, because I didn't want to, you know, scare him out of hiring me. I said, you know, why did you hire me? He said, you have a nice smile. You carry a good conversation. The rest you're going to learn on the job. And that was very powerful to me, because that was him sitting across from me and saying, is he a nice guy? Does he have a nice smile? Is he great to interact with? Because that part is harder to teach. The art and
that's
science.
The part that you mastered that from high school,
really. Exactly.
That's the part that you got it or you
trial
didn't.
By fire. Exactly. I got that out of high school. But that was something that was a lesson that I've taken with me since then, to know that you you hire the right person, not to fill a position, where a lot of the other ones were they were looking to fill a position and they're trying to determine my skills if I was good for that position. But rather, he said, here's a guy who I think has potential. I'm going to hire him, and I'll obviously augment the position to be right for him. And B, he was looking at me for my potential. Here was somebody and what I was able to present on the emotional and the human side. The science of how to go out there and raise money, I had no doubt. I was a 20-year-old kid out of college.
But he knew you could learn.
He knew I could learn.
Yeah. Outstanding. So you had clarity. You were clear about who you were. You exuded confidence, no doubt. And led to the hire.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What other traits? What else do you like to see in individual fundraisers? Before we get to this clarity of organization, sure, around mission and things like that, what else do you like to see in a fundraiser?
So obviously, you know, one of the most important ones is, you know, and they even say it on resumes, on job descriptions, is, you know, self-starter. But I want to dive a little bit deeper in that. The idea of being that kind of entrepreneurial person to get out there and create new relationships. Because when you are an entrepreneur, whether you work for a big company or organization, or you are on your own, a fundraiser is somebody who has to build their own network. If you come into a new city or a new organization, you're not necessarily, hopefully you're not just picking up the dozen or 100 donors that are already giving. You're going out there and raising new money. And that requires you to be a self-starter, to say, okay, where are these people who would be interested in supporting this cause? How do I get introduced to these individuals? How do I interact with them? How do I stay in touch with them? And all those kind of skills require you not sitting on your couch and eating bonbons, right? If that's your approach, then it's not going to work. If you want to be sitting behind a desk, it's not going to work. You have to be somebody who enjoys the thrill of going out there and making those contacts. So that's one of the main things that I look for, is somebody who has that kind of drive to kind of get out there and make it happen.
As if you're building your business.
Yeah.
Because you are. You're building your network.
Your own proverbial Rolodex.
Instead of for your business, it's for the good of the mission.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, so let's go to the organization side, being clear and confident on the organization side, because we want to be successful in our dating relationships,
sure,
with our donors. You want a clear statement of mission. Right. Really like an 8-word mission even.
Right. So a lot of the consultants who will help an organization shape their mission, it has to be concise. It has to be super concise. You know, what you can share with somebody on a one floor trip up on the elevator, right? It's really who are you? What's your organization? And if your job is to end malaria deaths, done. We're in the business of ending malaria deaths. You're not waxing poetic about how you're going to do it and by what deadline. You just want to be able to say a mission is what you're in the business of doing. So you should be able to clearly say, in, like you said, you know, eight words or you know, one sentence, this is what we're in the business of doing.
The only thing you might qualify it with maybe is location. Like
right.
Ending malaria deaths in... West Africa.
Right, right. If that's tied to your organization, yes, exactly. If you are Central Africa and that's your job, then that obviously is in their mission statement. Absolutely. But again, it's not going on about, you know, your values and the vision for this. It's just clearly what you're in the business of doing.
Why don't you take a little sip of water?
Thank you.
Because it looks like you're thirsting. And I will suggest that we talk about, so the mission, you have some examples of missions in the book. You remember... I mean, Charity Water is a very brief one.
So I'm obviously a big fan of Charity Water. Yeah. They bring clean water to the people in Africa.
All people in the
Well, they, and it's interesting.
Are they limited to Africa?
It's a whole other conversation about kind of the scope of their vision. But they do many, many different villages in Central Africa and some other areas as well. But basically, they are a fundraising organization and they fund water projects on the ground. So they don't actually drill themselves. They have organizations on the ground doing the drilling, but they are a fundraising organization that funds those well projects.
And they're one of the organizations that has a very concise mission statement.
Yeah, a lot of them do. I'm trying to think. you referring to a certain one in particular? Or?
No. Just that was one example.
Right.
You cite some in the book. So people have to buy the book.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't give the whole book.
Right, of course.
How many pages? It's a 200-page book. What do you expect? This is only nonprofit radio. No, this is nonprofit radio.
Right, there we go.
You should have high expectations.
Yes.
But we can't bring you all 200 rich pages of Date Your Daughter.
I would have come with a list of the mission statements prepared. I'm
sorry. No. Okay. After mission, we're moving to... our vision.
Yes.
Now we're getting a little more detailed.
Yes. So when you talk about vision, obviously I'm doing it through the context of dating and relationships. You know, vision is where you're headed. So when I talk about dating, when you're dating for a purpose, right, you're looking to find somebody who can spend, you know, whether it's the rest of your life with or a meaningful part of your life. The idea is to find somebody who wants similar things as you. You know, using the dating analogy, do they want to have children? Do they want to live in the city or the suburbs? Do they want to be, you know, primary breadwinner, both, you know, both working, whatever the case may be. But these are important conversations that you have when you're dating someone seriously. Where are we headed together as a unit? Because if you're not on the same page, if one wants children and it's important to them and the other one doesn't want children, that's probably a deal breaker.
Yeah.
So, you know, the correlation to fundraising is that I
discovered that in my first marriage.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. All right, there you go.
I could bring some case study in on that.
Yeah.
It's probably outside our conversation today, but suffice to say.
Yeah. Right. So when I was, when you're doing the fundraising business, and you're looking to get someone to support your cause, you're not supporting your cause for what they are. It is now. Right, we bring clean drinking water to Central Africa. That's not the case. That's going to get someone to open their wallet. What's going to get them to open their wallet is this is where we are now, but this is where we're headed. And if they buy into the idea of where you're headed, then they're going to support you. So if they see that vision of your organization as the white picket fence with the dog and the tire swing, then they will support you. They're not here to fill holes or to cover your gaps in your budget. They want to know that you are a viable organization and you have some great things in mind and you're headed in the great direction. So that's when I talk about vision and through the dating perspective is the idea that you're selling somebody on where you're headed.
We need a break. Wegner CPAs. Here's an excerpt from their latest testimonial. Quote, they're accessible. They care about their clients. End quote. Can you say that about your accounting and audit firm? Go to the site, WegnerCPAs.com, check out their credentials, check out their clients, then you know how I like to do it. Pick up the phone and talk to Yeet Uchtum, WegnerCPAs.com. Now time for Tony's Take Two. I've got three new videos, all on the same subject, build your grantmaker relationships. That may sound familiar to you. It was on the show a month ago. That was February 16th. Now it's in video, repurposed. You see, different format, and perhaps you learn better by video. That's a possibility. Although, then you're probably making a mistake listening to nonprofit radio audio podcast. If you learn better by video, then you're wasting your time right now. Right now, this minute, this second that you're spending listening to me right now. Right now. Now, this one right now, it's wasted. It's wasted. Squandered. Or maybe you're just a little interested in video, But you also like audio. So let's go on that hypothetical, because otherwise you would have turned me off already. And then you're not even going to know what the videos are about, because you already shut me off 10 seconds ago. This is what the videos are. They are three versions of the panel that I moderated at the Foundation Center. We have the full version. That is roughly 90 minutes. There's the broadcast version, roughly 50 minutes. That's what you heard on the show back in February. And there's the executive summary, which I pared down the whole 90 minutes to about 10 minutes, chopped it. But, you know, executives, you know, they never get, we all know this, right? The executives never know the full story. They don't get into the weeds. So if you want the executive summary, you can have it for about 10 minutes. But do so at your own peril, I would say. There's lots of good advice from this panel from the Foundation Center. You remember it. You know, it was a couple of weeks ago. But in case you want a fuller version, you know, then you got the link to the 90 minutes. If you want to hear the broadcast version again by video for some reason, maybe you learn better by video, but let's not get into that morass. Anyway, I got videos for you. And if you want to refresh your recollection, that's a term of art in the law, by the way. Refresh, you're talking to a witness and you give them a writing, a paper, and that's used to refresh their recollection. It would be admissible just for that purpose. So if you want to refresh your recollection, then maybe you want the broadcast version or the executive summary. Let's see. So the panel is on the grantmaker relationships, and we are going to continue with that. We continued with that in the following week. So I'm losing myself. No. So if you come in and out of the podcast, and there's only some you listen to, some you don't, you'll want to know that grant makers we talked about twice. There was this panel from the Foundation Center that I moderated, and then the week after was John Hicks from DLB. Remember Dylan's Lightbulb Hicks? So if you are interested in grantmaker relationships, you feel like you're not doing well in grantmaker relationships, you'll want to check out the videos and also that show that was that followed with John Hicks. All right. We've got my video with links to these three versions of the video. That is at tonymartinetti.com. Now, let us return to Jonah Halper, the wise and experienced Jonah Halper, and date your donors. Okay, Jonah Halper. Thank you for your indulgence there.
Hey, sure.
Are you familiar with NTC, Nonprofit Technology
Conference? I actually attended not last year, the year before that, and it was amazing.
It was.
Yes, it was. Yeah. I had a, first of all, they had like big band on stage.
So you're talking about 2014.
It might have been 2014.
2014, right.
Yeah. I had a fantastic time. It was in California. It was in San Francisco that year. I loved it. I mean, they were great. The organizers there were fantastic. Yeah.
Okay. I think that was 2013.
Oh, was that 2013?
2014 was my first one. They were in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
So they alternate east, mid, and west.
So it must have been 2013.
So it must have been 2013.
Okay, there you go.
3 years ago.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of smart people. Oh, they had a big band on stage?
It was. I mean, it had that enchantment. It was like whoa, I wasn't expecting that. And the conference in general gave me that kind of flavor. Like it was like the sessions were great. The people in the hallways, you know, I always love the hallways. The hallways are the best because when you always meet the best people in the hallways. Sessions are good because you can hear the training and their great sessions.
Yeah.
But there's nothing better than being able to just bump into somebody and find out they're doing amazing work, and it could be a small church in Virginia and they're doing phenomenal things that you could apply to your organization in some specific instance. I love that.
Yeah,
that kind of randomness. Cool. And the NTC, the Nonprofit Technology Conference, did that for me.
We were talking about your organization and its mission and vision statements. You also want you want organizations to be clear about who their primary customers are,
yeah,
and not to morph into something that you really don't belong doing or being with, or again, being true to yourself.
Sure.
Being say more about that.
Yeah. Let me give a good story that I heard from my friend Nancy Lublin, who is the founder of Dress for Success and was then chief old person of DoSomething.org,
right,
which is teen engagement. So the fact that she was, you know, not a teen made her the old person.
Now she's on Crisis Text Line.
She's
CEO of Crisis Text.
Crisis Text Line was
third one she started. Well, she didn't start DoSomething.
Yes, that's correct. But she might as well have started DoSomething, because where I'm going with that story. And everything she touches turns to gold, and that's not luck. I mean, she is a tour de force. I mean, she is unbelievable. Yeah. The story that she shared with me was that when she came to DoSomething.org, it was centers. It was a brick and mortar centers around the U.S. Mm. where teens could get involved, and it was founded by a Melrose Place actor Shu, and I think it was Andrew Shu. His name was
okay.
And it was a floundering organization. They were having major problems, and they were presented when she came aboard with an opportunity for, I don't remember what the dollar amount was, it might have been $250,000, $300,000 from a company that said, build a teen center near our call center, like near, you know, our operations, and you know, we'd love to have a teen center over there. And Nancy, as the new CEO of the organization of DoSomething.org, declined the money. And an organization that is starving for cash.
Struggling, yeah.
Yeah. So it seemed to be like, you know, like, what are you doing? You know, you're new kid on the block here, and you're turning down this money. And when they brought her into the offices, or, you know, in her offices, they sat down with the leadership, and the leadership's like how badly do you want this job? You know, you seem to be kind of walking your way out of it. And she said, you know, you need to trust me, because this is not the future of DoSomething, right? Forget the .org. It's not future of DoSomething to have all these brick and mortar, you know, places for students or kids to come together.
Yeah.
It needs to be online. And she, after that point, shut down all the physical locations, took the whole thing online, rebranded it as DoSomething.org, and is now getting, forget the corporate dollars that she turned away, the $200,000, tens and tens of millions of dollars they get, and it primarily comes from companies. So Aeropostale will partner with them for Teens for Jeans. They found that homeless teenagers, the number one thing that they wanted were a pair of jeans. Why? Because they don't have to be washed every day. And someone who's homeless and doesn't have access to clean clothes, pair of jeans are cool enough, and, you know, generic and cool enough that you could wear without having to clean them every day. And that was something that homeless teenagers wanted. And they partnered with Aeropostale for kids who had, you know, better privilege to donate their jeans in the store. It created a tremendous amount of foot traffic into Aeropostale, and that was valuable to them. The co-branding was strong, and it turned out to be a wonderful partnership. And they've just replicated that kind of model of companies adopting programs, supporting their operations. They have done a tremendous amount because, to your point, they were focused on the mission of serving young adults who want to volunteer. And it was not going to be a brick and mortar place. It was going to be online. And because she was paying attention to that and not the dollar, she was able to take this organization, which was floundering, and make it the powerhouse that it is today, and that she's now entrusted in the hands of, at her time, the chief operating officer, Arya Finger. She's now the CEO of DoSomething.org.
And Arya's been on Nonprofit Radio twice.
Oh, there you go.
As COO and as CEO. And then they spun that off because, okay, I see. Yes, because online they're able to serve millions and millions of teens, like 5 million. I mean, they have this big treasure trove of data.
Yes.
About teen engagement and how to engage them in issues. I think their sweet spot is like 16 to 25 or so, and then beyond 25, they
well, if your primary money is coming from companies, big data or data is so important.
Yeah.
So because that's the case, then, like, you know, something that you mentioned earlier about how Nancy Lublin went on to Crisis Text Line, that was born out of the fact that they were getting texts, emergency texts of young adults who were suicidal, were getting abused, or things along those lines. And as an organization that's there to help people, what do you do with that?
They weren't equipped.
They weren't equipped.
equipped. Wasn't equipped. Yeah.
And then they found that the typical, the standard 911 was not going to be able to handle us, especially for the digital age where people are on their cell phone and they're more comfortable hiding in the bathroom on their cell phone and texting somebody in an emergency. They needed to do something. So that kind of stuff has outgrown, has grown out of dosomething.org, and that's why you now have crisis text line. So there's so many wonderful examples that you can see where, especially in their story, where they stayed true to their mission. And if it wasn't, and if emergency texting was not right for dosomething.org, they didn't just like expand the mission to fit under dosomething.org.
Yes.
They made it crisis text line. That's now a new organization. Nancy's now the head of that. And that was a new thing. It wasn't like mission creep and now we're doing, you know, we're solving another problem. They started a new organization with that.
All right. All focus on your primary customer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. All right. After we've started this relationship, we need to keep it going.
Yep.
And you call this, I don't know if it's the name of the chapter, but somewhere you say, from lust to love. Well, so the analogy, the relationships, go ahead.
Sure. So we all know this in our own relationships, you know, your boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it is, at the early part of the relationship, there's tremendous amount of lust, right? You know, there's the attraction, it's new, it's fresh, it's exciting. And that's so important because that is going to be, you know, the chemistry needs to be there. That's vital to the success of meeting new people and starting to develop a relationship with them. But it needs to mature. Right. And there's if the relationship is only on that.
That's the part I missed in high school.
The
maturity. Oh,
I missed the whole thing
in high school. The maturing of the lust. Well, I had a lot of lust, but
okay.
I didn't know what to do with it all.
I'm in the same boat, my friend.
Okay.
So that has to mature. So if you get somebody to become a donor of your organization, right, they may be enamored and they might be a beautiful organization. You could be a Charity Water. You could be, dosomething.org or any of these causes that are gorgeous. I mean, they look gorgeous. They're often. Offices are gorgeous. They just have got that locked down, but it needs to mature. In other words, the relationship with them needs to be more than just face value, and it's not just I'm excited to be part of this, you know, sexy organization. It needs to mature to say, look, I'm a partner. I'm somebody who's not just an early part of the relationship. I'm a partner. I'm in this for the long haul. I want to help them grow, whether it's capital improvements, whether it's the infrastructure, whether it's special projects, whatever the case may be. I want to see this organization grow from where it is now and where it's headed. And that means that the relationship needs to mature where they have a greater stake in the game. And that means, you know, much like in our own personal relationships, where we might do certain milestone things like move in together, there needs to be that kind of advancement, that kind of moves management, and to use, you know, fundraising jargon, to take that relationship from one that's courtship and maybe a first gift to now increase that support over time.
Part of this is a plan. So we need to be more structured maybe than on our dating side and our relationship side, but we need a stewardship plan, basically.
Yeah.
What belongs in our stewardship plan?
So I like to talk a lot about new donor acquisition because, you know, you mentioned that if you have someone who's a donor and you want to keep them, one of the chapters is called Keep the Fire Alive, right? So that you want to put some good practices in place. You know, I talk about there in that chapter about keeping the fire alive and how to move that relationship along, that you should treat someone like an investor or treat them like family, right? And while it may sound like that's a dichotomy.
Yeah, that's outside the investor.
Are we investors or are we relationships?
Yeah.
Right? Are you treating me like a business transaction? So the nice thing is that it's not mutually exclusive, because what happens is in your relationships, there are absolutely expectations. If you and I decide we're going to move in together, right? We have a wonderful relationship. We love each other. We have a wonderful relationship. We're going to move in now, and we're going to take it to that quote unquote next
level.
I'm
free to do this, by the way, my wife lives in Indianapolis. And nobody listens to this show.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about word getting out.
Yeah, exactly. All right, good.
We can talk after.
Okay. So if we want to take that to the next level, is there anything truly different about our relationship with each other? Do we love each other anymore the moment that we are now in the same apartment? No. Right. There's no inherent change that happens between the way you feel about me and I feel about you for the decision that we've decided to move in. What we have done is we've increased expectations on each other, that there's a certain kind of shared life now that we have that's more than we had before, because we've said that this is a priority of ours.
We've deepened our commitment.
We've deepened our commitment. So now that we've deepened our commitment, I now have a certain level of responsibility to you. Right. There's a certain level of investment that I've now made.
right, than I now to manage that. Now, if I move in with you and I live like a single person, right, I don't care about your feelings. The week before when we weren't living together, I'm behaving the same way.
Right.
But now that we live together, I have a new set of standards that I have to abide by. And it's mutual, right? You have expectations on me. I have expectations on you. And that's not a bad thing. It's a healthy thing. But what happens is I need to meet those expectations. So if I want to, if you've given me something, if you've given me money someone who's going to give money, a donor, and I take that money, the relationship starts then. Right, it's not thank you for your gift, then I'll speak to you next year. It's now that I've taken your $10,000, I have a responsibility to you to make sure that you know how your money is being spent.
Oh, so this gets to our stewardship plan.
Yeah, so the point of the stewardship plan is that when I get money from a donor, it's not just another box to check off and say, okay, I got this gift, I got to go get another 15 or 20 other gifts to meet my campaign.
Now, how are we going to
how do we take this and deepen that relationship? So there's everything from leadership roles. There's opportunities when it comes to getting them to open up their own home and their own network. A lot of times people think that if you ask somebody to do favors for you, favors, quote unquote, like open their home for a parlor meeting or to give to your cause, that's burning equity. That deepens the relationship because they're giving to you. So finding ways to cement leadership positions for them to spend more time in your offices. And when I mentioned treat them like investors and treat them like family, why should they only have a relationship with you, right? You are representing an organization. There's some other wonderful people in the offices. Some of the best donors and leaders I know come into the organization and they say hello to everybody from the person at the front desk to the person in the mailroom. They know everybody because this is their family now. So those types of opportunities, ways to kind of systemize that are important. You could see in the book a whole bunch of suggestions for that.
All right, we're going to go further. We got to take a break, but I want to go a little more into this idea that asking donors and volunteers to do more is not burning them out.
Right.
It's deepening the relationship, and not doing that could burn them out. So stay with us. Got to take a break. Telos, the credit card and payment processing company. You check out the video at tony.ma/TonyTelos. And that is going to explain that long, long tail of passive revenue that you can enjoy when the companies that you refer join Telos and you, the nonprofit, earn 50% of everything Telos gets. The video is at tony.ma/TonyTelos. Now, back to Jonah Helper. Asking people to do more.
Yes.
Whether they are donors or board members, this is not, typically does not lead to burnout. What leads to burnout is give me your annual gift.
Right.
And now give me your annual gift a year later and a year later, and there's no substance beyond your giving.
Right, right. Let's peel that back a little bit, because I think a lot of the fear of asking people to do more comes from the fear of asking in general, especially asking for money.
Yeah.
You know, fundraising is not a dirty word, and I know so many professionals and leaders in the business and consultants talk about how it's not a dirty word, but I kind of tie it into the relationship side of things, in the sense that when you're asking for money from somebody, if it's void of a relationship, right? If you're just asking and you're dialing for dollars, it's taking the relationship out of it, and it's just making an ass. And no one enjoys that.
It's all transactional.
And no one loves that. No one likes to do that. That's terrible. When there's a real relationship and it leads to money, it's beautiful. And obviously you can hear the correlation between like sex and relationships. If it's just mechanical and there's no relationship behind it, it may be fun.
Yeah.
If you get the gift.
Well, let's not underestimate great sex.
But my point is it's probably not going to be a sustainable long-term strategy.
Right.
You're not going to get somebody, they may give you one time, but it's not going to be a capacity gift. They could probably give you a lot more than what they're giving you, and it's not like there's any relationship behind it. So if you're going to go after those easy shots like that, then you might get lucky, right? But in the end of the day, if you develop a real relationship, then asking for money is the exact opposite of a negative experience. It's the most empowering, beautiful next step in that relationship that makes people go, yes, I'm in this relationship. I'm in it for the long haul. So it's kind of it's kind of that double-edged sword where fundraising could either be a terrible, terrible experience.
Transaction-based.
Transaction, a wallet with legs, right? It's the sex appeal of just the fact that they have money versus somebody who's a partner in the cause and is excited about the vision and wants to see it succeed.
And just wants to do more than just give.
Exactly.
And you're not going to know that until you start asking.
But even if it's just give, it's done in the context of, I am partnering with you, and the way I'm doing my share is by giving you money. Because if you're going to be on the ground drilling wells or curing or ending malaria deaths or providing needs for special needs children, I'm not as a donor, I may not be the expert in how to do that. But I know if I give you money and I trust the experts, it'll get done. And that's fine. They'll become a partner in dollar, and that's fine, but it's not a transaction. It's more than that because they are bought into the vision of the organization.
All right. And a part of getting people to buy in and having them feel insiders is sharing the occasional downside.
Yeah.
The failures.
Yes. I've seen the good, bad, and the ugly on this. I've seen organizations that are afraid to share information with their donors and they're worrying about it. It'll burn a relationship. And those tend to be the relationships that were never strong to begin with.
Yeah.
But there are wonderful examples of how failure or, where something did not work. And it may not be, gross abuse mistrust. Things sometimes just don't work. And you put your organization on the line, you try big things, and it doesn't pan out. It's a wonderful opportunity to deepen the relationship. I'll give you a quick story example. I was in Scott Harrison, who's a CEO and founder of Charity Water, in his office, and he was telling me about early on in Charity Water, before it was like the
very sexy,
very sexy, what it is today.
Yeah.
He told me early on, he had a couple people on staff on payroll. They were doing their first projects and they were going to go belly up. They did not have the funds for payroll. They were really desperate. And Scott told me that he sent out a number of emails to people who were in his periphery, to these donors, and to basically say, like, I need help. I need help. We're in trouble. Like, we're doing great work. It wasn't just like, bail us out. It's like, we're doing amazing work, but we're in trouble. And one individual, a guy named Michael Birch, who is a tech entrepreneur. He was the founder of Bebo, which is a British based social network from the 90s that got bought by, I think, AOL for like $800 million. And he's done numerous projects that also brought in a lot of money. But here was a guy, Michael Birch, and he responded to Scott and said, I'm happy to meet next time I'm in the New York area. I think he was in San Francisco. And he meets with Scott, and Scott kind of bares his soul, tells him everything going on. And, they're doing great work, but it's just not catching on. They're breaking their teeth, and it's just not happening. And Michael Birch gives him some recommendations, gives him some advice. And then he says, I'll see what I can do, as far as giving you a little help. So he goes home. I don't know how many days it was, whatever it was in the story that Scott told me. But Scott told me that he was sleeping in bed and his phone went off. I don't know, text or phone call, but it was from Michael Birch. And he said, I sent you some money. I'm wiring it to your account. I hope it helps. And Scott, trembling, opens up his bank account, and there was a $1 million gift that was sent from Michael Birch to Charity Water. Mm. And that was that trust that Michael had. And he was really kind of like one of the first major donors that they had that kind of went all in on them. He was somebody, after hearing the troubles and tribulations, but was bought into Scott Harrison, who is the personality and the mission that he stands behind, and said, this is something I want to support. And they turned that negative in a tremendous partnership, and to this day Michael and his wife are huge supporters of Charity Water.
Everybody is not perfect in CEO land. You talk a little about flawed characters.
Yeah.
Because it's natural, things don't always go perfectly. We might even make mistakes. I mean, that was not a mistake that Scott made, but things don't always go perfectly.
Right.
And
well, we know that from our personal relationships.
There are a lot of flawed characters in history, too.
Right. 100,
they succeed.
Yeah, I mean, so we all know this from our own personal relationships. So, sometimes you date somebody, it doesn't work out, and it goes down in flames. Sometimes it's amicable, sometimes it's definitely not. Whatever it is, whether it's dating, marriage, we're human, right? Yeah. It's a human condition. So in the nonprofit world, it's true as well. We don't have
you know, perfect relationships. And there are times where you butt heads with a person that you're involved with, a lay leader, a volunteer in your organization, and you might no longer be the right person to have that relationship with them. It might be somebody else. It might be something that you can work with them and see through to the end. But the communication, and like any relationship, and I talk about it in the book, about the importance of communication, you can either work through it, or if it's you're not the right person, to either find somebody else. If they are bought into the cause, if it's the cause they care about, they might be able to be kind of handed off to somebody else. And if it's destructive, which sometimes, you know, a small fraction of the relationships are, and it's not in the best interest of the organization for them to be aligned with this lay leader or donor, even if they give a lot of money and it can hurt the organization,
yes,
you got to cut your losses and pull out. So there's absolutely a whole spectrum on relationships and how you handle them, depending on what's the best interest of the organization.
We got to leave it there. The book is Date Your Donors, dateyourdonors.com, and you'll find Jonah. He's at Jonah Helper. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations again on the book.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Next week, continuing this theme with your intentional stewardship plan. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on tonymartinetti.com. We're supported by Pursuant, online tools for small and mid-sized nonprofits, data-driven and technology-enabled. tony.ma/pursuantradio. Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, wegnercpas.com. And Telos, credit card and payment processing, your passive revenue stream, tony.ma/tonytelos. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is the line producer. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez, and this music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday, 9 to 10 Eastern Time, and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential. Live life your way on talkradio.nyc.
Are you feeling unhappy with your body, shape, or size? Ever feel out of control with food? I'm Elizabeth from Nourish the Soul, and on the show, you will uncover the root to these imbalances and discover a permanent solution to having a healthy relationship to food and your body. Join us every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on TalkingAlternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.